are listening to the Drew and Jay podcast brought to you by 21 Media Productions. He is Drew Lasker. I am Jay Marriott. This is episode 7. We head north of the border with Caledonia Gladiators star Patrick Whelan. But before we get into this episode, let's share a little message from our sponsor. We've teamed up with an incredible basketball clothing brand that's going to take your style and game to a whole new level.
So get ready to elevate your passion for basketball, both on and off the court, because we're proud to introduce our collaboration with Always Ballin, the brand that's redefining basketball fashion.
That's right, folks. Always Ballin isn't just a clothing brand. It's a lifestyle. Whether you're shooting hoops at the park, catching a game with your friends, or just want to rock some seriously stylish shreds, Always Ballin has got you covered. From premium jerseys to trendy streetwear, they've got it all. And here's the best part. Not only are they our podcast's official merchandise partner, but they're also creating some exclusive Drew and Jay Show gear that you won't find anywhere else.
That's right. So get ready to rep your love for basketball like never before with Always Ballin top-notch apparel. And stay tuned, because we got some exciting giveaways and promotions coming your way soon. So until then, keep listening to us here on the show for the latest on all things basketball. And remember, when it comes to style and passion for the game, we're always balling.
Okay, let's sit down with today's guest. Welcome, Patrick Whelan.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Mate, let's throw you into the action. One word answers only. You are now playing the Marriott Minute. British teams in Europe.
We got Caledonia Gladiators, London Lions.
One word answer. Flyers. One word answer. Oh. No, you can only give one word answer. So it's just a reaction.
Oh, my bad.
For clarity, it's not a quiz, all right?
Okay.
A, B, C, D, E.
So it's one word that comes to mind when you hear it.
Okay. One word, historic.
Leicester Riders.
Tough.
Gino Crandell.
A problem.
Jamal Anderson.
Deep boy. I don't know if Caledonia that counts as one word, but yeah.
We'll take it. We'll take it, mate. Caledonia Gladiators.
Building.
Coach Gareth Murray.
Intense.
Current game day sneaker.
LeBron 20.
Favorite away day venue.
Ooh. Morningside Arena.
Game day song.
Burden of proof, Benny the Butcher.
Game day food, and this is good we brought this up because you said you're eating good up there, so I better hear something fancy.
Recently, chicken and couscous.
Ooh. British Basketball League potential.
Limitless.
Let's get him out of the chair. He's completed it. It's the Marriott Minute. He thought it was a quiz for a second, but it was one word, and he smashed it in the end. Well done, Patrick.
He definitely aced it, as they say. Fucking Pat Whelan, welcome to the pod, my guy. I've been wanting to say that, by the way. how would you rate my Scottish accent? 1 out of 10, how would you rate that Scottish accent?
I mean, I'll give you a 6, slightly above average.
Okay.
Is that a minus on the end of the 6?
Hey, I'm only an hour away, so I've been practicing it. But hey, man, we're appreciative of your time. Obviously, it's Monday afternoon. We know you were in Bristol yesterday, and we heard on the comms about you guys' schedule over the last couple of days. But, let's start things off. You spent 2 seasons at the Leicester Riders. Just kind of walk us through of how this Caledonia opportunity came about.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I think it's important for me to say that those 2 years at the Riders were very special to me. You know, coming back from Spain before that, I'd kind of, you know, I don't want to say fallen out of love with basketball, but it felt a bit more like a job. So coming back to Leicester and working with Rob and all the guys, it was special to me because I really, like, you know, found my love for the game again, and found how to play with joy again, playing there. So, first and foremost, those are big to me. And then, when Caledonia came around and, you know, the opportunity to play in the FIBA Europe Cup came around, in a club with big ambitions and one that I see, taking off in the future, I couldn't really say no. You know, I think that it was a no brainer for me. So, yeah, I'm super happy that they reached out to me for sure.
Was there a conversation or any dialogue that you had with Coach Rob or with Russell or with the Riders organization? Or was that more handled through your agent?
I mean, a little bit of both. Obviously, you know, first thing I did when I thought I was leaning towards signing with Caledonia was call Coach Rob and explain to him my reasons. And he's a professional, right? He understood, you know. The first thing he said was, well, you know, he said, I'm excited to see you play on that stage if that's what you go for. And he said, you know, I hope you look back on these 2 years and realize like what a special time it was. So, you know, he was a professional about it all, man. Like, I've got honestly like nothing but respect for him.
So, you know, focusing on Caledonia, and it's still really early in the season. Just give us an evaluation of where you guys are at. So, you know, if we don't live in the BBL bubble and we think like, hey, you know, like this team on paper should be a super team, and we're actually looking at this as a long-term project, which if you're going into the Euro Cup, it is. How would you evaluate this group of players that have come together in such a short space of time and having to manage in, you know, very different expectations?
Yeah, I think like the talent is off the charts. Like the talent and the IQ and the experience, basketball knowledge, all that stuff, off the charts. I think what you're seeing is a bunch of players who have played other places and, you know, played other roles. And now they're like being asked to play in the British Basketball League, which, as you guys know, is a little bit different to a lot of the leagues in Europe. The style of play is a little bit different. The athletes, I'd say, here are some of the best that you'll find in various leagues across Europe. So I think what we're experiencing now is like, okay, how do we adjust? How do we, you know, learn to bring it every time out, no matter where we are? How do we know what to expect? Can we come in and do our jobs in the British Basketball League as well as in Europe, you know?
Yeah. And let's focus like more intensely just on the coaching. Obviously, you know, you've given Coach Rob his flowers, and now you're working with Coach Gareth. You know, give us the differences between those two coaches. You know, it doesn't always mean one's better than the other, but they're most definitely different figureheads. I had Gareth down in Plymouth coaching him, and on the sidelines looks like a super mellow guy. But then we get the BBC documentary and we see some smashing of boards and some shouting. So I know behind the scenes he's got a little bit of fire. So just give us a little breakdown of those two coaches and what makes them special.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the thing that makes Rob the most special is like, he wants you feeling as good as you can feel when you get into a game. You know, like throughout the week, maybe, you know, he's not, you know, as hard on you. He's not maybe as, you know, as he's not pushing you like, you know, we're playing 5-on-5 every day or, you know, we're going to run every time you do something wrong. Or he's not that kind of coach. He's a coach that builds your confidence. And that's why you see so many players play well there. Is that coming into a game, you feel like, you know, you feel like you can't miss a shot. You feel like, all the work you've done to the week has really built up to that. So, And with Gareth, the thing that makes Gareth special, in my opinion, is like his ability to read another team and to understand what another team does. I think you've seen it when we've played, you know, the few games we've played in Europe. You know, Sibiu and discounting Bilbao, but Sibiu and Anvil didn't, you know, crack 70 points against us. And I think that's because of his attention to detail. And he's an intense guy. I wouldn't describe Gareth as mellow in any way. I think even when you guys see him sat down on the bench, we see the intensity in his in him watching the game. So I wouldn't describe him as mellow at all. So I think what makes him special is
his poker face, right?
It's a game plan. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, let's revert things back to Europe. Obviously, we've been following you guys intently, just like we are all the teams. You know, I'm excited that I can watch British basketball during the week. But firstly, just put in perspective of your schedule. For those that might have not heard Azania's breakdown over comms yesterday in regards to starting off into Spain, traveling to Spain, and ultimately finishing up in Bristol.
Yeah, I mean, first off, we left for Spain the day before, obviously. We leave very early in the morning, probably like 3 a.m., was it? I think it was 3 a.m. in the morning we left. We went to Spain. Get there, we practice there, right? We play the next day versus Bilbao. And then Thursday, travel day, we get to Bristol. We don't get to practice that day. Travel from Bristol to Plymouth the next day to play the game. Back up to Bristol after that game. We get in Bristol, we get a 40-minute practice to go over our scout and all of that stuff. And then we play Bristol the next day. Back up here, got here in the early hours of this morning. And I think for me, the biggest thing, bigger than recovery and stuff, like, is like, you realize how important practice time is. Like, as a player, you think, oh man, like I just want to play in the games. But I think now we're realizing, okay, you know, we need to practice, like, to get better, we need to practice. I think that was the biggest revelation to me, at least.
Well, put into perspective for us, because there's been a lot of chatter over the back-to-backs. I think so far, the British basketball teams are 0-5 when they play back-to-backs. And just, you're a player, you're out there. What actually is the toll? So, for example, playing in Bristol, I mean, it was very clear that you guys had heavy legs, but give us some perspective of what you actually feel when you add in the travel and when you add in the back-to-backs in that schedule.
Mm-hmm. For me, especially in a back-to-back, we haven't played a back-to-back yet, but I played a couple this summer when I was in Canada. So for me, the biggest thing about a back-to-back is the lack of sleep. Because I don't know about you guys, like after I play a game, it's always difficult for me to sleep. There's no getting to bed on time, you know? So the lack of sleep for me is a killer. I try and do my best to take care of my body, be in the weight room, make sure my joints are feeling good, my tendons are feeling good. For me, that lack, you end up playing a game on maybe 4 hours sleep, you know, and it's not healthy for any player, and you're not going to perform your best in that way. So yeah, for me, that's the biggest thing.
So I'm glad you kind of touched on the Canadian league. I want to circle back a little bit to the summer and that opportunity. Like what made you kind of look in that direction, and how did that opportunity come about?
Yeah, I mean, I could lie to you guys and say that it wasn't about the money. But at that point in my career, I feel like I needed the money. I can't be
honest,
that guy.
Honest, I like it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one motive. And you know, I had a great time there. But also, like, I knew I was going to be playing against really high level competition. And I knew that, you know, it'd just be another step in proving myself on a different stage. So, really glad I got my foot in the door over there. And I think also I learned a lot about the game and about the levels that I need to get to and about the things that I need to improve. And it was amazing. Like my team, for example, Niagara, we had probably 7 assistant coaches, something like that, something crazy. So before every practice, I got the chance to get an individual workout in for an hour every single day. You know, it was a lot of games, but you know, I got a chance to really improve my game over there.
Yeah, and just let me know, like, how much did it influence your decision? Like, did you get that, you know, obviously staying with the Riders and then having to some of the think about it, whereas going into a different environment, like you said, kind of had to force you to up your game a little bit and maybe opened your eyes to some bigger opportunities. Did that influence your decision at all, or?
Not really. I think at that point, I was really just trying to have as much fun as I could over the summer playing basketball. And I knew it was something I wanted to try, was to keep playing over the summer, again, for financial reasons, but also to keep improving my game. I think the biggest consideration was just not having any national team stuff this summer. It meant that, you know, this was maybe one of the few summers that I could do it without missing any of that, because to me, that's another huge thing in my career. So I don't want to miss any of those windows. Hmm.
Well, just the final basketball question before we move on to more important and bigger news with yourself is, obviously it's been a lot of noise with the Gladiators, in particular here on the podcast. We've even talked about, you know, ways to tweak your roster and make it better. But I mean, you look up, you guys are 6-3, you're 4th in the league. You have less losses. So technically you're 2nd. And now it's just like, now that we reflect, is it just you guys just needed time? I mean, what's the mood in regards to in the camp in regards to your team and what are the conversations you guys having amongst each other?
Yeah, I think, you know, first off, a lot of issues need to be kept in-house. It's not the best thing to hear on a podcast, but a lot of issues need to be kept in-house. I'm a big believer in that, but what I can tell you is, like, we're not happy with any loss, be it London, be it Bilbao, be it Sheffield. We're not every single loss. You know, I think we do a good job of learning from, and I think, in my opinion, sometimes these things need to happen. You need to get exposed by a Bristol or a Sheffield in order to further down the line be a better team and fix those problems that you might have. So I think it's still early in the season. Amongst ourselves, we're really still positive, still looking forward to the rest of the season. And we know we got a lot of work to do, but I think we have the guys who experienced enough to and ready to put in the work. And I think you'll only see us go up from here for real.
Love it. Well, we can't leave here without talking about your new venture. You've come into the podcast world. So let's start with welcome, first of all. You know, In the Gap, tell us how this came about.
How it came about. All right. So I've been having an idea to start a podcast for a while. I've been talking with a lot of the guys, and it started as more of a joke, because after, you know, we were playing in Leicester, and maybe I think there was a couple times we lost in Sheffield. There was a time we may have lost in Bristol, and you know, maybe some things didn't go our way that we couldn't control, is all I'm going to say. And I'd go to the guys and be like, "Yo, this is going on the pod. I'm putting it on the pod." And it started as a joke. I came to Pete and I was like, "Oh, Pete, I've got an idea to start a podcast and tell people what it's really like. Like, what are our lives really like as professional basketball players? Because I think a lot of people don't know and don't really understand. So I came to Pete, and Pete kind of laughed at me. He was like, I'm like, Pete, what are you laughing about? Pete's like, Gino's also come to me with an idea of a podcast, and Jamel's also come to me with an idea about a podcast. So the man, the myth, the legend, Pete Simmons, he's connected us all like he does so well. And obviously we all knew each other. None of us knew each other wanted to start a podcast, but we get put in a group chat, and we started discussing our ideas. You know, I had a couple phone calls with Gino, a couple with Jamel, about where we see things going, and the rest was history, really. So shout out Pete for real.
Pete Simmons from the Lester Riders 5 of 6. That's the connector right there. I mean, when I go back and listen to like the first season and the first couple episodes of Jay and I literally cringe. So obviously you guys are just getting started, just entering this space. Like, what's the biggest challenge for you guys?
Man, Drew, I can't lie. The first episode, we had no idea what we were doing. We were just on there, literally like, okay.
That's everyone, bro. That's everyone.
It's like, who's going to talk next? Who wants to talk about this? It was a lot of editing that definitely went into that one. But no, the biggest challenges so far have been like definitely the scheduling. So trying to get a time where everyone's free. You know, Gino and Jamel both have kids. Pete's traveling like all over doing his stuff with 5 or 6. So scheduling definitely been a challenge, but once we get on there, you know, I feel like it flows pretty nicely. Like, we just have regular conversation as if we're all just sat in a room. And those guys are great too. Gino and Jamel are both great at, like, you know, bringing up stuff that I never thought about and adding little bits to the conversation. I think we're going in a good direction. So, you know, we're going to keep getting better, I'm sure. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, man, I give you guys 5 stars. So everyone listening, make sure you go out there, subscribe, like, and support the guys. They're the only current players that I can think of in our kind of community that has a podcast. So we want to make sure we support that. And they're always going to be able to provide a different perspective that Jay and I can't, because we're has-been. So make sure you guys go check that out. But finally, Pat, before we let you go, you mentioned there one of your co-hosts is Gino Crandell. When you guys played together at Leicester, I mean, it was arguably, we could have tossed up a coin and one of you guys would have won the MVP. Ultimately, Gino walked away with it. But what was special about that tandem, that backcourt tandem?
Yeah, I think we just complemented each other quite well. You know, if I had to bring the ball up, I was going to put the ball in Gino's hands. Like, I was going to play off the ball. I understand that as a point guard, he's very good at, you know, seeing the game and reading the game and finding people when they're open. So credit to him. I think his professionalism and his ability to be unselfish, but when he needs to still score and still do him, I think I've not really seen many people who get that balance right like he does. And you know, him finding me open many times, I think I was like 0.5 of a free throw percentage away from being 50-40-90. So shout out to him for real, man. Cause a lot of those layups and open jump shots came from him. So we definitely complemented each other really well.
Yeah, man, it was certainly a special, special relationship that we all enjoyed watching at the time. And, you know, you never know down the line. Drew tried to start a little rumor that, you know, Gina was available and perhaps he could have gone to Caledonia. But what we can only dream here on the pod. But listen, Pat, thanks for your time. Remember to tune in to In the Gap on all podcast hosts. Mm-hmm. And good luck for the rest of the season, my man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, brother.
Mr. Pat Whelan, always a pleasure to get one of the Whelan bros on the pod.
Man, very cool. We've had him before and we'll have him again. But yeah, looking forward to seeing the rest of the season for Caledonia. He seems very optimistic, so I'm excited.
Indeed. Well, let's move to the socials, man, where they've been burning up as usual. And I kind of felt like over the weekend, I shaked a beehive and there were 1,000 Cheshire fans buzzing at me, trying to sting me. And I'm looking out for Jay Marriott to come save me. And you're nowhere to be found, man. So thanks for having my back. But but let's start here with the Cheshire Phoenix. Let's start with them. We're going to talk about them off on the court, but let's start off the court. You know, I shook the tree by questioning their punctuality, just because on Saturday night versus Surrey, game was supposed to tip off 5 o'clock. Game gets pushed back to 6 because obviously there was a huge traffic jam. And so I tweeted about there should be some adjustments if tip-off times are being pushed back. And the thing is, to the Cheshire fans, because I still love you, even though you guys were coming at me hard, is it wasn't the fact that you guys were late. It's the fact that this is the second game that the actual tip has been pushed back. And I know you can't control traffic, obviously, but you know, the direction that the league is going, where all this stuff is being televised, you know, from my perspective, I believe, you know, we have one shot, right? And so, you know, just thinking the bigger picture, you know, someone like Sky Sports, that's where a month ago, October 13th, they was facing the London Lions, similar again, stuck in traffic. The game got pushed back 15 minutes. And then I even heard on their Sky Sports game Friday, they arrived a little bit late, or Thursday, arrived a little bit late, but it didn't affect the tip. But I mean, what's your whole overall thoughts on not just Cheshire, but just the league overall in regards to, should there be some stipulations in regards to making sure you get to games on time?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one. Like, first of all, you just got to stop picking on the Sea of Yellow. I mean, what a beautiful fan base. You know, you got to stop picking on them, man. But I don't know. It's such a hard thing. Like, it's such a hard thing to regulate. You know, how do you, you know, it seems like traffic nowadays is just like a staple of the UK everywhere that you go. It regularly drives me absolutely mad. You know, as well as there being unfortunate accidents now, there seem to be like, you know, a million repairs going on everywhere. You know, I face it on a Thursday night. Usually a Thursday night, I head back to Plymouth. And there's a million diversions, and what should take me 2 hours takes me like 4 hours to get home. So I'm the worst guy to talk about traffic. The only way that you can fix it is, you know, that you start building habits of people being able to be down there earlier. But then, are the teams that are hosting, are they in a position where they can have that team arrive earlier? And is there a provision for them to arrive earlier? Because a lot of teams don't arrive early because they don't want to just be hanging around. There isn't a provision of food and drink. There isn't a way around that situation. So, you know, there's so much to think about logistically, but obviously what it's unearthed is a little bit of a weakness in the way that Aaron was, projecting what we were going to be doing with the media, is that if you have people doing the commentary for two games, then obviously that lateness is going to expose that reasoning for doing it. So it's a little bit complicated, and I would probably say until there's like a bigger league solution to how we can get there earlier and be in, but that's going to come back to owning your own venue and having those kind of luxuries that you perhaps see at the NBA, you know, is to the reason why people want to be there earlier.
Yeah, you brought up a good point, and that's where I was basically getting it to. It wasn't, someone said I was, you know, I can't remember the term that they use, poking at Cheshire. But I'm looking at the bigger picture, and it had a huge ripple on effect because now the Sheffield Manchester game gets pushed back. And, you know, Ant Rodan, Routledge are on the comms. I've been in that position before with a double-double. You get an hour break, and that's the time for you to just reset, do a little bit of prep, and then get back in SC for that doubleheader. But there was a five-minute turnaround for those guys, and it's a lot, you know what I mean? So a lot of people are affected by that. And look, I don't know what the answer was, so I was just putting it out there that in regards to a little bit of accountability. So I wasn't it was no more than that. But, I mean, what do you think about – do you see a day in the future to where you know, teams, every team is getting to a city, even if it's 30 minutes away the night before, kind of like football does. And just before you go, Jay, Judy Beer, she added me on this, and she said, looking at the bigger picture, we want to be seen as a professional league. That's not going to happen with changes to tip off times. I don't know the answer, but something definitely needs to change. So, and that's where I was coming from. It was just a bigger picture of our league, just more from a professional perspective. Because think about this. If you're in that Surrey crowd, it's your first ever game, and the game is supposed to start at 5, and you're there, you know, at 4:30 or whatever, and you're told that the game is going to get pushed back an hour, and you ask why, and they say because the other team is in traffic. So, you know, how does that look to the new fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy solution, but of course, in the future, like the aim is, and it's been spoken about before by, you know, we've spoken to the CEO, we've said it on the podcast and things like that. Like, people have to own their own venue, you know, and we have to be able to build on that side of things. That's going to come down to financial implications as well, you know. So what are those teams in a position of being able to do? So we've seen it before with anything from finals to long trips and stuff like that. There's some teams that will pay for them to be up the night before. There's some people that travel to the game the day before, and it all comes down to finances. So if everything plays out the way that it's supposed to, and these American deals come off, and the league as a whole ends up growing, then it's going to take care of itself, you know. But right now, I think that we're just in a state of flawedness where it's very hard to kind of bring that whole league together when they're all maybe slightly in different positions. You know, not to say that there'll be financial parity. You know, Aaron covered that last week. There's never going to be financial parity, but at least it enables us to get to a point of what people are saying is professionalism. And until then, I think, you know, it's just unfortunate. And I would say that Cheshire are probably falling foul just to some coincidences rather than them, you know, playing any sort of mind games, which is, I think, that what they thought that you were doing, you know. And you're like that mate that you've got where, like, they're always getting into fights, right? You know, I turned my back for 5 seconds. I came in and I was like, what the heck is happening here on Twitter right now? What is Drew doing? But, you know, let's see what the future holds.
Hey, you know what? I once learned from a poet named Fabulous Flournoy. He always told us, we don't sweep anything under the carpet and everything needs to be addressed. So you can blame him, Cheshire fans. But let's stay on the Cheshire Phoenix, on the court, because if you look now, they're second in the standings and with a 7-4 record, and their form out of the last 4 out of 5 games they've won, averaging 90 points. Defense is phenomenal, only giving up 76 points a game. However, if you look deeper, those 4 wins have consisted of Manchester, Plymouth, and Surrey, who are at the bottom of the table. That 1 loss is to the Bristol Flyers. So, Jay, coming to you straight and direct, are the Cheshire Phoenix for real, or are they a product of a soft schedule?
I mean, I think they're for real. I really enjoy watching the Cheshire Phoenix. You know, I don't have any skin in the game in terms of like a favorite. So I know people think naturally Plymouth and stuff like that, which I always want them to do well. Don't get me wrong, but I'm able to sit back and just really enjoy it nowadays, especially without the Raiders being in the mix. You know, like, so it's the City Patriots now. And I don't necessarily, I'm not there anymore. I'm not in Plymouth. So, you know, it's good just as the casual fan just to figure out who I enjoy watching. I used to enjoy watching the Riders for years with Gino Crandell and Pat, who we just had on the show. And, You know, I just think this roster is just really well put together. This is probably Ben's best work in terms of the fact that if you usually look at Cheshire and Coach Ben's work, it's usually a few changes and then it starts to click, and you can probably count that they'll always be like in a final, maybe, you know, or win a final. And he went through that spell of having the big fellas, you know, he always had a good 7-footer on the team and stuff like that. Well, this team looks just fantastic and just easy on the eye, but not only easy on the eye, they're actually performing, you know, they're actually going out there and winning games. If you look at Jack, I wasn't convinced by him last year. I thought he was talented, but I wasn't convinced by him. So when they were returning him, I thought, you know, what do they see there? And he's taken a massive leap. You know, Aaron Rye, like, it doesn't translate, is what a lot of people were saying. He's come in and just been a breath of fresh air, plays the game very, very differently. And then the return of Skylar White as well, who's just, you know, arguably the best stretch five in the league right now, is just causing all kinds of problems and matchup problems. So just, yeah, I'm just enjoying them right now. Do they slow up and end up coming down the league? I don't know. But right now they're hot. They're organized. Their culture seems strong. I like them.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And the signs of a good team are you beat the teams that you're supposed to beat. And so home and away. And this is what Cheshire are doing. Obviously, they don't control their schedule. They have to play what's in front of them. But the main thing is that they're taking care of business. And the biggest thing is, if you look at their roster and a couple names that you just mentioned, there's no one that spooks you. It's nobody like, ooh, you know, that worries you or scares you. And so when I think about their success, to me, I have to lean on Coach Ben Thomas, who's doing a phenomenal job. You know, his first couple of years in the league, I wasn't sure, but it's clear. And I said this before, he's a damn good coach. And the thing is put it in perspective that there's different types of coaches, right? Like, you know, the coach at London Lions, I respect because it's not easy coaching talent, right? Everyone just thinks you put a group together and they're supposed to win. No, what coach is doing at the London Lions is phenomenal. You know, because it's not easy coaching talent, as you would know, Jay. It's actually harder sometimes. But then the other side of it, it's also a skill to coach or working with what you got. And we all know that Cheshire budget is, you know, probably bottom half of the league. But first of all, they do a great job of recruiting. And then Ben is able to maximize what they got. Just as Newcastle, they got two guys from that Cheshire Phoenix roster last year. And I love the fact that he instills that hunger in that team, because you can see it. Like, those guys know, and the Cheshire Phoenix organization knows that in reality, that place is just a launching pad for most of those guys' careers. And so to place that reality in front of players and use it as a motivation, because you can see that they play with the chip on the shoulder and they're well connected. And the biggest thing is for me is that they have an identity, which we're still trying to find the identity of a couple teams, but we know what Cheshire's going to do. Like, they're going to spread the floor, they're going to launch threes, and they're not going to waver. Whether they're up or down, they're going to play the same. And so I would have to say that for real, and winning these games right now with this soft schedule only is going to give this team confidence moving forward. And by the way, they've been doing this without Aaron Rye, who's been injured for a month ever since he got player of the month in September. So he's going to get his timing back, his rhythm, his confidence, and this team is going to be even better. So shout out to the Cheshire Phoenix organization, and we will keep following. But let's move things on to a game that the Cheshire Phoenix were involved in, where the Surrey Scorchers hosting Cheshire. Halftime score was 52-43 Surrey, and Cheshire goes on to win 91-73, with Surrey only scoring 21 points in the second half. The other team Saturday night is the Newcastle Eagles away to the Leicester Riders. Leicester Riders up 53-50, which was a great first half of basketball, and then the Riders run away 111-88 and score 58 points in the second half. So, Jay, which team, Surrey and Newcastle specifically had the biggest second half meltdown?
Well, for me, it's Eagles. It's a no-brainer because the pressure's on now. You know, Coach Dootle's got the pressure. He's got the treasures. Like you said, like it's a difficult job either way. You know, sometimes you've either got this, small budget and you've got to make the best of it, or you've got these embarrassment of riches that are right at your disposal, and you've got to get that working. And I just haven't seen. I know you said like the European game, I saw you put on Twitter and you thought that was the turning point for those guys, but I haven't seen them be able to put it together for 40 minutes. So when I got the opportunity to watch them against Bristol, amazing in the first half, looked like they had some great flow. And then second half, just, Jekyll and Hyde. I think I saw that on Twitter as well, Jekyll and Hyde. I think for Surrey, like the roster's just not good enough right now. So there is talent there. And there are some great pieces for Surrey, but for me, I think there's just some big pieces missing for them being able to put that together. And so, those offensive woes are going to continue to happen for them. But for Newcastle, I mean, why? Why does it dry up? And we probably do need to revert it back. You just brought up a blast from the past in Fab Flannoy, and that is, you got to play defense at this level. If you do not play defense at this level, you will get punished. And then offensively, if it's not clicking and you can't go and get easy buckets because you're not getting stops, then we've both felt it, Drew, right? We've both been in those games where the pressures just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, and eventually those walls break down. And I think that it's got to start on the defensive end, and then offensively, Newcastle just got to figure out a way for everybody to get out of each other's way, but also still play their game. They've got an immense amount of talent, and I think the pressure's on that they got to start performing.
Yeah, I mean, when I really look at it, and I went and looked at their roster, and when this team was announced in the preseason, everyone was like, the BBL All-Stars. But I went and looked at their roster, the box score, and now I'm starting to think maybe this team just isn't as good as we initially thought, because Scott Spencer had a DNP, which shocked me because he played a few minutes in the European game for the first time all season. And I'm starting to think, well, what's the purpose of him being here? Like, he's been here for 3 months and we haven't seen him. So is he that good where we're going to be that patient to wait and see until he's healthy, which is something you don't usually see. And then Will Neighbor only playing 4 minutes, 0 points. And their bench production was 15 points from Ward Hibbert and Malcolm Del Passion. So, I'm really worried about this team's depth. And there's a lot of, and obviously Larry Austin Jr. is hurt. And so one man goes down, they seem depleted. They seem to have been hurt all year. And remember, what was my concern about this team in the preseason that I kept harping on about? I kept saying, I'm worried about this team's health just because the way that they played in the preseason. And they haven't been healthy since the season started. But as I said on Twitter, I was there on Halloween when this team got their first European win. It was emotional. Shared a moment with Paul, Sam Blake, Darius Defoe. And just for a week, I got to give them a pass. I can't criticize them, so I'm not even going to touch them. So I'm going to revert over to the Surrey Scorchers, man, because this was a team that we asked the public about. Were they turning the corner? And, of course, Rob Hunt, he gave us the whole breakdown of their schedule of how tough it was. And so when you looked at it, it was like, maybe this team is – a product of a heavy schedule, and they're coming 2 weekends in a row with the win on the brink of going 3 consecutive weekends. And Dan Routledge over the comms mentioning being in the top 8 for the first time since December 2020, and things looking rosy. And then in the second half, they collapse, only scoring at 21 home. Points since exactly at home. And I saw a fan say they walked out at halftime for the first time ever. So, I mean, this team is so talented. I watched them against Cheshire, so sloppy, so many sloppy turnovers, and which I was befuddled by because they got three point guards there. One of their point guards was out, the American was out. But I'm just disappointed because I know they're talented and I was getting ready to get on the momentum train and come on here and hype them up. But again, drop another game at home. And so just very disappointing. But so I'm going to go with the Surrey Scorchers. But finally, you know, we wrapped the weekend off down south at our home, Plymouth, where PJ finally picks up his 500 win against the London Lions. Who would have thought, as we just talked about last week, who was going to be the first team to beat him? And I think the odds would have been, what, 5,000 to 1, similar to, you know, the Foxes winning the Premier League a couple years ago. And they blow out the Lions 94-70. So, Jay, were you impressed with this win?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's going to be people out there try and take it away because, you know, they put out their London's second team or London's third team or whatever else. Regardless of what team they're putting out there, they are tough. Even their youngsters are tough. So I think, you know, for me, I think it was a byproduct of frustration. Like, I'm seeing a lot of those guys now. If you look at Taylor and Faulkner and Atwood and all these kind of guys, like, even LVC himself, they seem energized and it seems familiar. It does feel a little bit like the Boo Man era where they've had a couple guys come in. There seemed to be something not quite working and now it looks like it's clicking and they're looking to try and take that out on anyone that's in front of them. You know, they got that, you know, I said not to panic in terms of the Surrey game. Like, I feel like they've just added these two pieces. They look good. And all you can do is beat what's in front of you, right? So they had to come out, had to put this performance against the London Lions. Nobody would have called it. And I think that's probably how Coach James managed it, right? Coach James probably just said, look, nobody gives us a hope in hell. You know, we're trash compared to London Lions. They're probably not even saying our name in the comms. So let's just go out there and play. And that's what they looked like. They looked like they were on a mission. Let's just see what happens with the future. You know, albeit it looks like these two additions look like they've added something to Plymouth. Can they go on a run that we've seen before? Time will tell.
Well, a couple of things that I want to unpack here because I got in my car, checked Twitter, Dan Routledge at me to my question or my response that Riders would be the first team. And he said, no, I think it would be Plymouth. Nice try, Dan, because I know that you didn't even see that coming. And so I hadn't watched the game. So I quickly looked and it's going into the fourth quarter and Plymouth have a 14-point lead. And immediately my immediate thought was just because things I saw on Twitter, I was influenced by and I was like, oh, this is a weak squad that Plymouth is playing. And I did really count it. Until I got home and I really dug deep. And this is very impressive by Plymouth. First of all, somebody at me asking me, why do I hate Plymouth? Or do I hate Plymouth? First of all, why would I hate a franchise that gave me my opportunity that I played, you know, 7 years of my career for? Nothing but love for Plymouth. But you can see this coming. They lost seven consecutive games. But the last two games, controversial inning against Surrey Scorchers, which they ultimately lost in overtime. And then that Caledonia game, they were going blow for blow all game, could have easily won that game. So this performance was coming. And like you mentioned, Jay, like with those two new additions of Green, which I only just realized that he came from Glasgow Rocks. I didn't realize till I heard Dan mention that. And then the other big fella, the rebounding machine, they're a totally different team, very competitive now. And so I look at the box score and I don't see that this narrative about them playing a London Lions weak team or young team. I don't buy it because look at this. Gabe Olesine, Mo Soleade, Kieran Sandy, Matt Morgan, Kaboza. That was their starting lineup. And then they had Queeley, Grantham, and the Lithuania coming off the bench with the young fella. Like, that's a strong, yeah, strong seven-man rotation. Yeah. And so this is a legit win for Plymouth. You look at the box score. Mo was a minus 26. Matt Morgan minus 10. Kieran minus 15. You know, Grantham minus 12. The new guy minus 16. Like, Plymouth just beat London. So let's throw this narrative in the trash and let's not devalue Plymouth. Like, they beat London fair and square and they have to play what's in front of them. So I'm very impressed with the Plymouth City Patriots. And by the way, you know, there's also this narrative out here that they're just jeopardizing the league and resting players. And so I went to the London Lions direct before this recording and asked for an official injury report. Sam Decker, Tariq Phillip, Luke Nelson, and Sharma are actual injuries. Couldn't play in this game. Couldn't physically play. Jordan Taylor and Connor Morgan are not allowed to play three games in 4 days due to their lingering injuries. So the London Lions chose to prioritize the Bristol home game. So, like, what else is this team supposed to do? Like, that all they could do was put out there who they could who could dress.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that team is strong. So I don't care what anyone says. Like, Plymouth put a full 40 minutes together, put a beat down that was probably coming a long way off, but we just weren't expecting it to be against the London Lions, you know? Plain and simple, like nobody was looking to call that. I know Dave Forrester said that. I think he said that he could see it coming, but I don't know about that. I'm a little bit suspicious of anyone that's putting that bet down. But you know, congrats to Coach James, who gets his 500th win and a fully deserved moment in front of the crowd. I think, look, you know, you've got to take those moments when they come, and I hope it is a momentum changer, not just for Plymouth, but for the league as well. Like, if all of a sudden they start performing and Surrey come again, and, you know, all of a sudden it's too small of a league for people to become insignificant. We want everybody battling it out and maybe pulling some of those teams that you never expected to be in that battle down in that battle and see how they react. That's exciting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, finally, before we move on, I had tweeted that from the optics, it didn't look like the players, the coaches, the fans cared who dressed up for London. And so I went directly to the fans. And so I DM'd Plymouth City Patriot fan Peter Walmsley and asked him, did it matter? And from him, he said, I've seen comments saying we only got the W because of a reserve side. Really think it's disappointing that certain people feel this way. You've seen the atmosphere in the pavilions when it's buzzing, and it was unbelievably loud, especially with PJ's 500 win. And then I also went and reached out to Samantha Jarvis, who you would know, and asked her the same question. And she said, it felt good. I mean, a win felt good, and we played hard. And I know they had some of their main players out, but to me, that's not who they brought, and that's not who we beat. Definitely didn't have an effect on how I felt after the final buzzer. I was so happy for this team and the fans. So there you go, guys. Plymouth fans don't care. And London Lions team were injured. And so there we go. They beat them fair and square. So we'll leave it there. But Jay, let's get out of here by going to the mailbag just real quick. One fan has asked, and I thought you could answer this better than me. And this is regarding to the London Lions, because I did also tweet that I think everyone's so hard on London. Like, there was a time when everyone is complaining about wanting to give young British guys an opportunity. No one is doing a better job of that than London Lions. Like, that's a fact. And so Ian Roberts messaged and asked, if the top young Brits are behind the young top young players from behind countries, from other countries, what do we need to do to close the gap? What are overseas programs offering that elite British programs aren't?
I don't think we have enough time to really get into the weeds of this answer. And I don't believe it's talent. You know, I know we claim him. He's come through the UK system, but we're not that far removed from Jeremy Sochan. We've seen that Quinn Ellis had his hand in the NBA draft and what he's doing now. And we see the wealth of British talent that we've got with the London Lions. So it's not necessarily, I don't think it's a talent thing. But we definitely don't have enough time to get in the weeds of what I've seen in other countries where I've played. But if we just use Spain as a really good example, is top to bottom, they have a system in place, like from a coach's perspective, where they are generating a more depth of talent. That's what I think that they're doing. And at the moment, I think that we've got some great coaches out there that just need to be supported better by the governing bodies and by the national teams, et cetera, because I just don't think that it's a professional enough environment. So again, you go back to Spain and all the way down to EBA, which is the bottom league, all the way up through the Spanish leagues until you get to the top league, is there are coaching credentials and you get attached to teams that are above you so that you can go and you can be on that coaching staff during practices. You can do observations. You have to get your qualifications. And we are, they build that hub of eliteness even from the bottom end, you know. So then we're just getting that all the way through. And I think that at the moment what we rely on is, and then not to say that some of these people that are volunteering are not talented, far from it, but they don't get enough support, you know. So we're looking all the way down to the regional age groups. It's just volunteers, and it's not the best. It's volunteers that are willing to put their time in, and there are some great people that have walked away. There's some great people that keep their skin in the game, you know. So, you know, shout out Cremer, shout out Alan Keane, you know, those guys I respect wholeheartedly. I love what they do for those national teams. So I think until there's a little bit more cohesiveness and probably finances, that's the truth, right? We go back to it again. Sadly, you know, Pat tried to say it like it was a dirty word, but sadly, like, you know, finances are what's needed in order for us to create a better hub. But go back to it, you know, shout out to London Lions. Like, they're doing something that nobody else is doing, and that is that they're blooding that young talent. They're letting them play, and they're showing that they do care about that talent and they care about that system. So, you know, I don't think they can be knocked in my eyes, you know. And Bradley Caboza had an amazing game, and win or lose, that's experience right there. He's getting that experience in order to hopefully either blood into that team and be a big part of that team, or be allowed to move on to somewhere bigger and better. Who knows? So, you know, like I said, I probably haven't done the explanation enough justice because we just don't have enough time. But if you were really asking me to get in the weeds, I think we've got everything there. We just need the finances and the cohesiveness on the governing bodies to really bring it together and make it work for every age group, you know? Mm.
Well said.
Amen. Well, let's finish off. Games of the week, Mr. Lasker. I am going to go with Plymouth versus Newcastle. I would like to see, was it a lucky win, which both of us don't believe that it is, or are the Plymouth going to go on a big run familiar to us from a few years ago?
Yeah, well, give me that Leicester London primetime game Friday night on Sky Sports. As I mentioned there, the Lions are a little bit wounded, and we get a chance to see how good is this Leicester Riders team. So I think it's going to be really entertaining.
Oh, I think it's going to be a frosty reception for the Riders, but let's see. Before we leave, we've said it before, we have a new sponsor to announce. We are building some fantastic partnerships. This one will be fun-filled and giveaways galore as we welcome Hoopin' and Lootin' to the pod. The UK's number one jersey destination and home of the Basketball Creatives platform and celebration of basketball cultures and entrepreneurs in the UK. You can shop all things basketball at hoopinandlootin.com and follow the socials for updates on stock, basketball news, and content. But if you have been following our socials, you will know that we are going to choose a player a week that you can send in your nicknames. We'll pick a winner each week, and we'll carry that to the end of every month, where Elliot at Hoopin' and Lootin' will choose a prize winner who's going to get something sweet. This week, I've picked an easy one to start off with. I am going with London Lions Sam Decker. Can you beat my nickname of last year? I called him the cheat code, which is what I called him after watching one of the finals where he literally came in and settled the game in the last couple of minutes. Get your comments on the socials now, and you will be picked to go into the prize draw for a Hoopin' and Lootin' prize. Anyway. That's it from us this week. Thank you, as always, for the support. If you think your brand would benefit with some love from the pod, then drop in our DMs. But until then, Drew, lead us out.
Yes, shout out to our sponsors, Hooten and Looten, and Always Ballin'. But thanks again for your time. And guess what, guys? Go check out my Twitter. Someone messaged me last night in Austin, Texas, that they were watching British basketball. How can that hurt the league? But anyway, catch you guys next week. Same time, same place here on the Drew and Jay podcast. Peace.